Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 for postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. A brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Well, good evening. Good evening, everyone, and welcome again to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum on this spring evening, the 24th of April, 2021. We want to welcome all of you that are listening via the internet, as well as our panelists that have joined us. And we want to invite anyone who is listening via the internet to come on in the virtual family room as an active participant in our discussion tonight. And I will be announcing the topic in just a minute. But for those of you who are listening via the internet, the number to call is 657-383-0671 so that you can actually let us hear your opinions and your views as we discuss our topic or topics tonight. Before we go any further, I want to ask my co-host for a radio check, Ms. Bianchi. Welcome to the show. And can you hear me? How do you hear me tonight?
Well, you sound pretty good.
Sound pretty good. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And we see that Sheikh John Kenneth Bay and Brother Warren have also joined us, and we hope that others will join us tonight. So, as we've said many times over the last 4 years that we've done this show, that anyone that comes on the show is free to introduce a topic of your choosing. So I always patrol the news during the week to see what may be something to start off the show with. A topic that has caught my attention this past week is dealing with police reform. And it's in the wake of the conviction of Derek Chauvin and all of the other things that have happened since that time, including a couple of killings, about three killings of black men that have occurred. And so there's a loud outcry for reforming the police culture, reforming police accountability. So the topic is the overwhelming power of police unions an unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA? And before we go ahead and ask Mr. Bianchi, who's had some experience in this area of oversight of the police, before we bring you on, I do want to just mention something. In an article posted on the internet, the writer says, police unions have been characterized as impediments, which is the same as obstacles, to organizational reform and as hindrances in attempts to discipline police officers involved in misconduct. Unions frequently oppose criminal justice reform proposals as well as have promoted, well, I'll just leave it like that. But then another article, it actually talks about something that happened a couple of generations ago when the city of New York Mayor John Lindsay was running on a platform to reform the police culture and provide oversight for the police with civilian review boards. And this was many years ago in the height of the civil rights movement in 1966. And the president of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, which represented rank and file police officers, said this, quote, "I am sick and tired of giving in to minority groups with their whims and their gripes and shouting," thundered John Cassese, president of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. And he said, any review board with civilians is detrimental to the operation of the police department, unquote. That was in 1966. And so he actually led a successful referendum to overwhelmingly crush John Lindsay's proposal to have a police review board to oversee the actions of the police department in New York. Now, here we are, many years later, and this cry has risen again very loudly. Now, finally, I want to say this. I just also read, don't have a quote to present right now. In one case, the writer of this particular article that I read said that even in some municipalities, even if a police chief fires a police officer that has been found to be guilty of some wrongdoing in the performance of his or her duties, that the police union can force police chief to submit the case to arbitration. Arbitration means to have an independent outside group or individual rule, and that if this arbitration results in the police officer winning his job back, then the police chief has no power to keep that officer from coming back on active duty on the force, regardless of what that officer did, which indicates that these powerful police unions that have millions of dollars to hire, to retain the best possible lawyers to go to bat for these police officers, if they can convince the arbitration judge that this police officer was wrongly fired, even though the police chief feels that this person was doing wrong, that person, that officer can get his job back. And in many cases, if they don't want to go back to that department, the union may help them find a position somewhere else. So we still have a need to deal with the problem of people wearing badges, carrying guns in the law enforcement profession that really are free to do pretty much what they want to do under certain conditions. Now, we know, you know, they can be brought up on charges like Derek Chauvin and eventually brought before the court and found guilty. But there is a problem, and the question we're asking for your consideration tonight is this: the overwhelming power of police unions and unstoppable threat. Key word here is unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA. Ms. Bianca, what do you think?
Well, police unions is just like any other union, unless they stipulate it. Teachers unions have seemingly more power or more influence than they do. Police departments are allowed to exist by way of state constitutions, at least a state that I know of. And that constitution gives the people the power not only over the government. I mean, we're not talking about the state government, but in essence it does mean that too. But a state constitution allows villages, towns, and cities to exist. And those villages, towns, and cities can write ordinances and laws pertaining to what they want to achieve, as long as it is not more stringent than the state laws. It also allows them to have taxing districts, fire districts, school districts, and also police departments. So that's how they get their power. Now, in municipalities, cities form commissions, a police commission, which actually set the rules and regulations on how a police department operates, and also other departments. Whether it's your fire department has a fire commission, Of course, you got City Works and so on and so on. Now, your Citizen Review Board is something that came about where citizens want to have, I guess you can say, input to policing. It kind of reminds me of block groups, block organizations, and ward meetings. Well, ward meetings, you have a police come in and talk to the people and give a report about what's going on in their ward and what they're trying to achieve. They don't have any over the operation of the police. They can bring police officers in some cases and to ask questions, but they can't make them ask questions. That's called subpoena powers. So the power already exists within people of the townships, the municipalities, the cities that the organizations work for. You know, in some cities like St. Louis, they got an ethical society, which is 97% black, 3% others. You got the police association, which is about 30% black and 70% white and others. You have two. And that's basically how they operate. I've seen some municipalities that will say that their officers don't engage in high-speed chases. Then you got some municipalities in the St. Louis area, like St. Anne. If you run through their district, their area, speeding, they're going to chase you if they have to chase you clean to Chicago, literally. And that's the way it generally works. There may be some bits and pieces to it. Oh, by the way, the commissioner, usually applications for, this is what it should be, applications for police officers should go to a central location. I wrote a white paper during the time of the incidents in Ferguson, and the several things I mentioned was the international database, which you see Congress is talking about, where any officer that violates the civil rights of a citizen, their name goes in that database, whereas any potential new hirees can have an opportunity to see their records. And I think that would be good. So that's basically... And this central, when a person come and apply for a job as a police officer, city hall, a fireman, any position that's open in that city, their application should go to a central location there in the clerk's office. And if the chief is looking to hire somebody, then the application on top goes to him, or whether it's the fire department. Then his recommendation goes to the commission, and it should be up to the commission to make the last decision whether or not they want to hire this person or not. And you know, another thing too, I also thought that policemen should carry their own liability. That way, it would... just like your insurance for your automobile, if you have too many claims against your insurance, your policy rates are going to go up, or maybe they may not want to insure you at all. So that's my input, Mr. Washington.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bianchi. We want to welcome Dr. Nobles. Welcome to the show tonight. We'll be calling on you for your input in just a few minutes. And also Sister Stephanie Runnels. We want to welcome both of you to the show. You joined right after we began. So I want to repeat the topic for tonight. The topic is the overwhelming power of police unions an unstoppable threat? Unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA. Is the overwhelming power of police unions an unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA. And I just want to read a brief quote that appeared on the internet. Police unions have been characterized, this is police unions, have been characterized as impediments, meaning obstacles, to organizational reform, such, pardon me, and as hindrances in attempts to discipline police officers involved in misconduct. So that's something that someone says about the police. And I also want to take this opportunity to invite any who are listening, anyone who is listening via the internet, to join our conversation tonight and let you know that as we proceed, we're going to probably close at 9 o'clock. We can go over more if the conversation is lively and people still have input. But if you come on, you can address the topic, which is what we just read, or you can introduce another topic that may be something that's on your mind concerning the welfare of the African-American community, because this show is about African-American community issues, Booker T. Washington African-American Family Room Forum. So we invite you to call in, and the number is 657-383-0671. So continuing around the virtual family room. Next, we have Sheikh John Kenan Bay. Welcome to the show, Sheikh John Kenan Bay, tonight. And what do you think?
First of all, I would like to say good evening, everyone. I'm listening intensively, and this word reform, it seems like if things are all right the way they are, you don't need to change, but if they're not, then you need to change them. I'm thinking in terms of the citizens, that there's one group of citizens counsel their children one way, and another group counsel theirs another way, and it's all in reaction to the treatment of what the police mean to these various communities. And the conversation should be the same, the concerns should be the same, it should be uniformity. So if it's not, why is it not the same? And what some people say, it reduced commonly to race. Now, if that is true, it means that the mothers, especially of the race of the former descendants of slaves, have a great concern about the children that they birth. And there are so many pitfalls and paths that lead to their death, and some have come through from the ones that are supposed to protect them. And if that has not taken place, then there need to be reform. The police union, I understand that that's an organization that kind of look out for the rights of the police, but it seems like it may be at the expense of the citizens. And the citizen want to contact with the citizen review board. But for some reason, it seems like citizen review boards are not able to get any traction to counteract that. So this word reform is the operative word. And even some of the protections built in to continue protection of those who terminate and take the lives of children that are produced by these mothers, something they call implied immunity. And Brother Bianchi spoke about that in reference to, I never thought of this, insurance, that each policeman has to provide his own insurance, which means that there's a accountability there, that it could be more effective in having the policeman more responsible in his actions. It also is a culture in the police that, because there's immunity, I could be incorrect, but some policemen go into the police post with that in mind, that they got this immunity. And I've heard some of them being very anxious about having the opportunity to get a gun. Where with that gun, they could take someone's life. you know, without any consequence as other citizens. So, again, reform, how deep reform runs, I think it runs very deep into the institution we're in. When the word used institutional racism, I think there's a lot of truth to that. And it's saying that you can't keep people from saying things about situations, but you keep it from being true. So some people don't like to hear the word institutional racism. The question, is it true? If it's true, is it bad? Is it unconstitutional? And if it's unconstitutional, it needs to be reformed. So basically, my general thoughts about what's taking place. Peace.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sheikh John Kenan Bay. And I'm going to repeat the question again and invite those who are listening via the internet to call in 657-383-0671 if you'd like to actually participate in our discussion that is ongoing regarding the topic. Quote, somebody has some background noise there. If you're not getting ready to speak, please go ahead and mute your phone, please. Is the overwhelming power of police unions. Now, the topic is about police unions, and I'm asking again, if you are not getting ready to speak, please mute your mic on your phone because I'm getting some background noise. Okay. Is the overwhelming power of police unions an unstoppable threat to police reform? So we're talking about police unions and the great power that they have. And the question we're asking, is this a unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA? And so we want to welcome again Brother Warren. Brother Warren, what do you think about this question?
Well, first of all, I want to say greetings to everybody from New Orleans. I purchased the other day a novel that Richard Wright wrote but was never published while he was alive. And the novel has just recently been published. The novel is called The Man Who Lived Underground. And the novel is about a black man who was beaten severely by the police to confess a double murder he didn't commit. So he escaped from police custody, and he hides out in the sewer system, and he lives in the sewer system and goes into different basements and so on and so forth. I haven't started it yet. I'm going to start it this week. So I just thought I wanted to mention that to segue into the topic that we're talking about. One of the great writers of all time, Richard Wright, whose novel wasn't published. And what I read was one of the reasons why the novel, the publishing companies refused to publish the book because, you know, his book, Black Boy, Need a Son. Well, in this book, he was very graphic about the treatment of the police, and there was no white person that was sympathetic. There was no white characters in the book that was sympathetic to blacks. And so according to the experts, that they feel that's why the book wasn't published at the time. So Richard Wright's daughter was instrumental. His daughter and one of his grandsons were instrumental in getting this book published. As it relates to the topic of police unions, I think the issue of police unions is tied with the overall nature of policing, particularly in the United States. And policing is the same really around the world. It's a paramilitary structure designed to keep a certain segment of the population in check and to protect the property of an elite class of people. Now, of course, we know that's really, you know, it's more expanded than that, but that's the essence. Of course, people need to call the police. If something happens, you have to call the police. On your police forces, however, you have a disproportionate amount of white people who do have racist views. And the police departments have always been, for those whites who didn't go to college or become professionals, the police department was always the job in your town that you were able to do to get a little salary, but also keep the Negroes in check in your community. and in the urban areas as well. Police have been traditionally very brutal in black communities, very, very brutal. And I think if we did an oral history from people your age, Mr. Washington, on down, in reminiscences and recollections of police experiences, that would be an interesting oral history there. And so, but we also have another issue we have to address with our people, particularly the younger people, is we have failed to inform them what happens if they come across one of these type of police officers, and we have failed to equip with the proper recommendations on how to respond when they come across a police officer. And three things, as advised by another elder, that we should enforce upon our young people when they encounter police: don't fuss, don't fight, don't flee. You're not going to win. We still have failed to start really talking to our young people about the police. And I tell the younger members of my family, as I have told my children who are adults now, you get stopped by the police, you don't say nothing. Show your ID, sit there, and don't say anything. And then we'll deal with the issue after it's over with. And that we have failed at that, because right now the issue of police brutality and the selective shooting incident that happens on black people, because, you know, white people resist arrest, white people wield knives, they do all that kind of stuff, but the reactions are not always the same. You have to eliminate the behavior of racism in order to solve the issue with the police. See, the police union is just a part of the overall issue. The issue is the belief that black people should be mistreated, should be treated inhumanely, that black people are ungrateful, they're un-American, they're not quite human, there's something immoral with them. They're cursed by God. So when we as whites come across them, we must contain them, we must mistreat them, and we must pretend that they are a threat to our livelihood and civilization, and we must cut them down. That's the issue there. And so I think that the police unions are just part of that overall viewpoint and perspective. And the problem that many whites are having now, and I'm going to tell you a news story that came out of the New Orleans area here just the other day. There's a community that borders New Orleans called Chalmette, St. Bernard Parish. We don't have counties, we have parishes. St. Bernard Parish, which is next door to New Orleans, it's a working class, poor area of whites. Well, what many whites who left New Orleans, they went right next door to their parish. Well, just the other day, a bus driver, the news story was a parent had made a complaint to the school district, and it was recorded on the school bus video. A little black boy had run to the school bus to catch the school bus, and the white lady bus driver told the kid, because I think the boy said something about he was trying to breathe or whatever, and then she told the boy, "Well, that's what y'all all say, but I don't see nobody with a knee on your neck." So it took the little boy aback, so he went and told his mother, and then the school system investigated, and sure enough, that was on the school bus video. So you have white people picking on black children at the schools, venting out their frustration and anger about what's happening in terms of police exposure of killing black people, lashing it out on the black children. This is going on all over the country. And so that's what we're dealing with. So the police union people are just the brothers the fathers, I guess sisters and mothers too, because they're women and part of it, of all of these white people that express this anger. And I guess you got some little black people who want to be with the white people and join forces with them who articulate this kind of stuff as well. But the belief that black people should be mistreated, abused, cut down by the gun because they are some sort of threat to democracy and to civilization, they're not American citizens, or they're not quite really Americans, that's a pervading view that still exists. And if you keep up with the news from various sources, and I try not to, but because of the way your cell phones are configured, you get these little news alerts on your phone, there are all kind of dirty incidents going on against black people. There's one story coming out now out of Virginia, I think, where the deputy brings this black guy home, gives the black guy a ride. I don't quite remember why, if the guy's car broke down or something. Then a 911 call is made. That same deputy comes back to the house and starts to shoot that black guy several times. Black guy's not dead, but he's not. But see, all this has happened after the Chauvin verdict. You see, and so the white people who believe in white racism are showing that we're going to still shoot black people. Now, I'm not justifying what that girl did who got shot by the police wielding that knife. She was wielding a knife. And so what I understand, and I never try to go into this, because there's so many stories coming. I just don't want to be overwhelmed and consumed with them. But from what I saw, the girl was wielding a knife at somebody. Police do what they train to do when they see those kind of incidents. It doesn't mean it was going to happen if it was a white person. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And the young man there in Minnesota who was killed by the police, from what I saw, he did fuss. He did fight. He did try to flee. Then he did something before all that was going on. He got on the phone and called his mother. Too many of these young people, our young people, white kids do it too, but the system don't have the same reaction on them. Too many of our young people throughout America are going to school, Mr. Washington. They're talking back to teachers. They are talking back to principals. They are talking back to disciplinarians. And then they call their mom and daddy to come to the school to defend them. And this young man seemed like to me, when he came across that police officer, he thought he was at school. Because nobody taught him. When the police look at you, many times, particularly a white police officer, because you're a black person, they're going to make an automatic quick judgment about you and how they should respond to you. So what you should do, young lady or young man, show your identification, don't fuss, don't fight, don't flee. The military brother who it was revealed later that was stopped, and I forget what state, and the police harassed him and did him all that kind of way and mishandled him. Again, the white police officers look at a black person, and the judgment is already there. And you got some cowardly black police officers who work with these white police officers in order to be accepted, try to prove they are part of the Royal Blue Society by also mistreating blacks, treating them roughly and talking to them harshly in a kind of way. So in conclusion to this lengthy, long-winded response to the question about the police union, I said all what I said to say the police union are extension and part of a greater issue we've been fighting for quite some time. I recommend people read Chancellor Williams, The Destruction of Black Civilization. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Warren. And next around the virtual family room is my dear friend, frat brother, and mentor, Dr. Calvin Wilson. And Dr. Knowles, you heard the discussion of at least the last two participants. I don't know if you had tuned in early enough to hear Mr. Bianca's response to the question, but I don't believe I need to repeat the question for you. But what do you think about that question that we asked?
First, I want to say good afternoon to everybody on the call. And I did hear Mr. Bianchi's response, and not to rehash what everybody else has said, one thing that I would like to see, I would like to see the federal government weigh in and get involved in some of these cases. Some of these cases are, I mean, the Derek Chauvin case was clear. Some of the other cases are not so clear. But I would like to see us use the federal government to come in and investigate these police departments for civil suit, because I don't think that the local officials and the local governments are going to do anything more to try to find the police officers guilty. I mean, it's just too many cases where we've seen where police officers have overused force, have really misjudged situations, and end up killing us, and they were able to walk free. That shouldn't have been the case. And I'm asking the government, the federal government, to get involved. Let's bring in the FBI. Let's investigate these situations. And the more we do this, the more we can tear down this police union. I'm not saying that the police union doesn't serve a purpose, a good purpose. I'm sure in some things they do, it is a good purpose. But the one thing that I see is that there's too many cases of us where we're being killed when we are unarmed, where we're not resisting, and it's just really clear. You know, and there's cases where we see other people, other races do things that will get us killed, and nothing happens to them. And I know these cases are many across the country. They're not tied to each other. But I will tell you, it's, to me, it's concerning that, you know, more of us seem to be dying in these altercations with the police officers than any other nationality. And I know statistics tells one story, but the stories we see are very clear, you know. And so I would like to see the federal government do more. I also would like to see the local governments do more to get involved, to really, you know, remove some of the powers of the police unions, to hold them accountable. Because we're going to get to a point to where cities are not going to be able to afford police departments. And we already begin to see large cities have gaps in with their in terms of staffing their police departments. I think in Philadelphia, I think they're down 268 police officers right now. And so one of the things that cities can do is police their own police departments and make sure that bad cops are not on your police force, on your police force. And if they are, they're put in administrative positions where they can't harm people, or put in positions where they can't, you know, practice their extremism or whatever it may be, because it's just too disruptive to society right now. And I just leave it as that, because a lot of the things have already been said. But I just, my key takeaway here is that I would like to see the federal government get involved and really take a counter look at some of these cases where some of these police officers have been found innocent. I don't think that's the case. And the last point I'll make here is this. It's troubling to me to see how black men are demonized, leads some people to say they should have been killed. You have to look at every situation differently, and you have to look at the situation, you know, you can't look at it holistically. You got to look at it, what's causing the police to interact with this individual right now. The fact that George Floyd, you know, had drugs in his system, or he was a drug user, to me that was a mute point. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a police officer overstepping his bounds, doing something that led to his death. And then the other problem to that is there's too many people in this country that are willing to give police officers the benefit of the doubt when they do something wrong. If you are in any other line of work and you do something wrong, people are going to hold you accountable. you're definitely going to lose your job. But there could be more than just losing your job. There could be other types of lawsuits that people pursue because of your egregious behavior or your egregious actions. And I'll leave it as, I'll leave it with that, Brother Cabinets.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nobles. And now we want to invite my dear beloved sister-in-law, Sister Stephanie, to give us your opinion. What do you think about this topic? Is the overwhelming power of police unions an unstoppable threat to police reform in the USA? Sister Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Hi, everyone. Blessed Ramadan. I hope everyone is having a wonderful weekend. Yeah, now we know what the police department stemmed from. I mean, there was a time where they were told to carry an extra knife or extra throwaway gun. When they do this dirt to the black man, they can pin something on him and say, this is the reason I killed him. So we're not a whole way, long way from that. But we've got to get away from letting these officers who are dirty, crooked cops get away with these type of things. I'm glad that the phones are out there now and they're being videotaped and so forth and so on, because this stuff has been going on for so many years. And it's just now being filmed where we can all see it and where it goes into the news. So, and what happens when they get away with these type of things, then here's some innocent police that winds up getting pock shot at, you know, or for no reason, because people are looking at all the police as being bad cops. So they got to be weeded out, you know, for their safety and for ours, because there are good police who's really there to do their job and to help the community. And those bad ones, they make it bad on everyone. But so I'm thankful that they're being found out more and more nowadays, you know, and it was especially on the black person. I mean, it's horrible when the police become judge, jury, and executioner instead of taking a person to jail. You know, it's horrible when you don't get to see a jail cell for your crime. They kill you right there on the street. So so many things have to be changed. But as far as the union goes, they got to have a union. All big organizations need a union for their own protection and so forth. But they've got to be weeded out. I don't know if they need to start doing lie detector tests or what on them, you know, to be out there working with the public. Make sure they're not a KKK, you know, or some other type of hater. Okay, well, thank you all. Hello.
You, Stephanie, we thank you so much. And we've only got about 12 minutes left, but we actually can go past 9 o'clock. But my goal was to go till 9 o'clock, and then if the conversation warranted it, we would keep going for a while. But I do want to say this personally before we turn it back on Mr. Pianca and start our wrap-ups. I know for a fact, as Brother Warren was actually speaking about, that it's a very tragic situation, and this is not in any way to excuse those situations where police have absolutely no justification, as in the case of Derek Chauvin and George Floyd, or in the case of Breonna Taylor and many others. Duarte Wright, I'm not really sure about that case, but I understand that the police officer said they were reaching for the taser and pulled out the gun. But regardless, I do know for a fact that child should not have been trying to run from the cops after he'd been arrested and the cuffs were put on him and he wriggled out of the cuffs and jumped in the car and tried. You just don't do that. You know, and we were taught as a child, and I grew up in the roughest part of the pre-civil rights environment, Alabama, under the Klan rulership in the governor's office. We had people like George Wallace, but before him, we had others that were even worse. And I remember during the civil rights movement, the freedom songs of the SNCC included a song that began with the refrain, "There's murder on the road in Alabama, Lord. There's murder on the road in Alabama." What they were referring to is the highway patrol. If they stopped a black person for whatever reason, especially at night, that might be the end of that black person's time on this earth alive. This is the reality I grew up in. So our parents, and we talked a couple of weeks ago about it taking a village to raise a child, and that's not just black children, but that was the way America actually began, as a community involvement with the raising of the children. In my small community in Tuskegee, Alabama, all the parents felt responsible to a great extent for the well-being of all of the children. And we were all told what Brother Warren has spoken about. You know, you don't fuss with the police, you don't fight the police, and you don't flee from them. You definitely don't try to run. You know, you say yes, sir, no, sir, and you try to get out of that situation with your life intact. And, so, yes, but the whole thing about the police unions being overly powerful, you know, all of the data that I've been able to collect over the last few days that I've been looking at this issue indicates that in many cases, not all cases, the unions actually bond together around the person who may be guilty, may not be guilty, to make sure that person, in many cases, not all, is able to stay on the force and continue to be part of that brotherhood or sisterhood, brotherhood, however you want to call it now. And I think that that's the real problem. Let me say this, and I'll turn it back over to Ms. Bianchi. If you're watching your watch, don't worry about the time. We can continue past 9 o'clock. That was just my original stopping time, but we can keep going. I do want to say this. And Dr. Nova is more familiar with this than anybody else that's on this panel tonight. But I'm pursuing a doctoral degree dealing with counterterrorism related to domestic terrorism. And some of this domestic terrorism is being perpetrated by people in blue or brown or green or whatever color uniforms they wear, wearing official badges and carrying Glocks or 9mm, you know, whatever. But the power of the state government behind them, but yet they're committing terrorism, and they know they're committing terrorism on our people, and that's part of who they are. And I think it's important for us, and I'm not a lamenting Jeremiah, you know, there's some people that, which I have the greatest respect for God's prophets in the Bible, but there's some people that look at Jeremiah as someone who's crying out, and God is getting ready to, I don't want to sound glib when I say this, so I'm using a little colloquialism, but slap a whammy on your head, people, because God is mad at you. And that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to scare people. But the research that I've begun about 6 months ago, when I first started building up a bibliography for this dissertation project, it tells me that racism, anti-black feelings in this country are alive and well in a certain sector of the population. And it's even reaching down into the high schools and They've got clubs of white racists that meet under different names. They don't call themselves the Klan anymore. They may call themselves something that's more palatable. But their whole agenda is to find others like themselves so they can repress black people, because they have a very strong feeling that black people have gained too much in this country. In their opinion, black people's only purpose for being in America was to be slaves to white people, and that should never have changed. But now that the black people have gotten the physical freedom, they are all for putting black people out of the country, killing the black people, or putting them in prison so that they don't have to ever see black people. Now, this may not be the majority of the white Americans. I hope it's not. But it is a significant enough part of the population, from the research that I've read, where it's a threat. And many of these people, unfortunately, are wearing the offices of law enforcement officials. And we need to be aware of that and tell our children, Brother Warren was speaking about it, be very, very careful, because black man, black woman, when that the blue light or whatever color lights they're using, but it's now mostly the blue lights, maybe yellow and blue and white and blue. When that thing flashes behind you, your life is automatically in danger. And take it for that. It's in danger. You need to do everything you can to make that policeman feel that you should be let go. Or if you've done something that deserves, you'll be taken to jail, that you'll be taken to jail intact so you can be processed and still be alive. But our young people are not getting that message for reasons I won't go into, because I don't want to give a long monologue about the problem of our children being raised in certain situations where people are just not talking to them and telling them these things. I was told these things when I was growing up, and I'm here to talk about it today. But so many of our young people, they're not getting the message. So we're going to go ahead and go back around. Ms. Bianchi, you're going to have the last word, but to begin our wrap-up, I want to turn it back over to you. What are your thoughts? Okay, Ms. Bianchi left. I think we'll just keep going around with Shake John Cannon Bay. Shake John Cannon Bay, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, as I said, I'll be listening intensively, and then I begin to think of the situation. And sometimes, you know, you kind of see it better when you see it from other person position. And right now I'm trying to get in a position of how the young people think. They're being asked to react differently to the police and a society that says about the preamble of the Constitution, that we're endowed by the Creator with pursuit of happiness, all these different things. And they're saying, wait a minute, hold up. Why? I got it. Act differently in an encounter of policemen. He said, what's wrong with y'all adult? Y'all didn't fix this? Now you're asking me to conform, to adjust to a situation I shouldn't have adjusted to, you guys didn't fix. You know, so I understand what you were saying. You need to live another day, but when's this thing going to be fixed? Are your children going to do this? The young people might say, is my child going to do the same thing? And they might say, I don't think so. You know, so I'm saying, I understand to conform, I guess, go along, get along, but this should be a temporary situation. This shouldn't be a situation that we are dealing with in 2021. 1921, who's dealing with the same problem. So I can understand counseling that when they talk about the talk that you give to your children, that talk is only given to the children of the descendants of slaves. It's not given to the European children. It shouldn't. It's a problem. It's a situation that needs to be fixed. So I can understand young people are saying, y'all old heads, you know, we kind of lost some respect, and you kind of said like, no, we demand respect because we tried to fight the fight, you know. But as we listen, I'm thinking about this situation, how we went backwards. Like, if the policeman is living in the community, it's a different situation. He's your neighbor. But they passed laws where the policeman don't have to live in the neighborhood that he patrols or where he works. So what are your old heads doing when y'all allowed that to occur? Well, I guess what I'm saying is that as a young person, when they get frustrated with me and they talk to me in a certain way, like, y'all ain't did nothing, you know, it's like, well, is that true? The empathy, when I empathize with them, then I realize, yeah, you're right. Yeah, changes need to be made. And each day delayed making the changes, it's causing lives. I don't want to say too much more. I might get too passionate. Peace.
Hey, it's okay to get passionate on this show about the issues. And so I see where Ms. Chuck had come, but he left again. So we're going to continue around the family room.
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I didn't see your number on my dashboard. I saw you had dropped off and come back.
Yeah, I had dropped. I had my internet had cut out.
Okay, well, we're doing a wrap-up.
Go ahead and get them out.
And you'll do the final wrap-up. Okay. So, Brother Warren, so what are your thoughts as we continue to do our wrap-up?
Well, I think so much abuse has happened to black people that we've been abused out of our minds. We don't know what really happened to us because we've been abused so horribly over the centuries. You know, my mother would tell me when she come up in New Orleans, you know, New Orleans in the southern part of Louisiana have a disproportionate amount of lighter-skinned black people, I would say per capita, than some other states. In New Orleans, a lot of your black females, very light-skinned, long hair and straight hair. And my mother, then, they were part of what they call them Creole girls. And my mother said, coming up in New Orleans as a black female, every white male, when they came close to you, expected you to give them sex. And she talked about a situation in the 1940s where a police officer had gone in this restaurant. And the black girl was working there. And the white police officer grabbed her and dragged her to the back, trying to rape her. And the girl resisted. And the officer took his gun and shot the girl dead. We've been so abused that some of us, we take the white people's side. That's just how abused we've been. We've been abused out of our senses and out of reality. And so when we tell our young people, son or daughter, that police officer is trained to kill you at any move you make that they could use as a rationale to kill you. So in order for your life to be preserved, yeah, they say you're an American. Yeah, they say you got rights. Yeah, they say all of that, son, daughter. But there is a certain way you got to respond when the police approach you, because it's your image is the image that's used to justify a certain lethal action or reaction. This is the hardcore truth. These young people need to be told this on these college campuses. The protesters need to be told this. Yeah, y'all out here protesting, but the people will kill you first and shoot you down before they consider doing it to white people. In fact, if you notice, and then these protests that they were having when the George Floyd death sparked a lot of this, a lot of the white protesters with the blacks strategically had placed themselves in the front line with the whites to avoid that type of lethal action that may occur against those blacks, black young people. And so that's the reality of where we end at this point. The young people got to be told that. And we're in negligence and malfeasance as adults and parents if we don't tell these young black children or young black people the reality. In New Orleans, the big thing is, and it was when I was coming up, going to the French Quarter, If you ever been in New Orleans, you know the French Quarter is the tourist hub. You got Bourbon Street and so on and so forth. But when I was coming up, that was not a place for blacks to hang out in. You would be dealt with very, very rudely by the white cops. But now, a lot of the young blacks, that's where they're going to Bourbon Street. And, you know, we have an event called the Bayou Classic. And we have an event called the Essence Fest pre-COVID. These are two events. These are two quote-unquote black events. And in the Bayou Classic, it was always a different treatment and response to the black crowd in the French Quarter area. Some businesses would close. They wouldn't be open up. And there would be some rough handling of the black young people there. Now, the white kids, oh, they could drink, sight, tear up a hotel, hang out the window of the hotel, walk on the roof. Oh, that was okay. But the black kids, the black young people just making noise and dancing was just considered a big old threat. So the young people, they do know this. But because the adults, the leadership, anybody with a high profile in the community, the de facto leader, is not letting these young people know about the fact that, yeah, they say we're American. They say we got this and that right. Yeah, they say all that. But when that police come, when that white woman or that white male, in some cases, the black power cop who wants to be accepted by the whites, when they encounter you and you begin to talk back and talk loud, that possibly will trigger a response that won't be good for you in the outcome. Now, the white kid, the white man, could be drunk, drive, and get stopped 25 times before they kill somebody and they might get arrested. We know that. That's true. All of that's true. And so as we work for police reform, in the meantime, I think a movement, really right now a movement should take place where that's all black people telling young black. Now, you want to see a response and a reaction. You let white people observe black people telling all the young people about the police and how to act, don't say nothing. That's going to make them angry. The white people would get angry for that. That's just how, that's the kind of people we're dealing with. You're dealing with people who get angry with you when you do something with yourself, and you become progressive and competitive, they become angry. And then when they perceive you're not doing nothing, they use that as a rationale to treat you a certain way. You know that very much, Mr. Washington. You know the anger and the jealousy and the envy middle-class blacks, the image of middle-class blacks or upper-middle-class blacks put in white people. Well, I remember that. When black people had white wall tires and you stopped at the filling station going out to the country, and sometimes the people wouldn't even serve you because they felt you was an uppity nigga because you had white wall tires on your car or you had a nice car. So even when black people follow the line, follow the procedures, and make themselves up mobile. I hear people, they talk about our African brothers Nigerians. They like to use them as some model of success. Well, you know, these Nigerians that come here, they come here with graduate degrees they got in Nigeria. So it's a different element of immigrants. And if you have a million Nigerians that are successful, you have twice or more of that of African Americans who are successful. We have PhDs. We have black people in all kind of positions, nice homes, sending their children to colleges, and everything, more than one college. So we shouldn't let nobody push on us another black immigrant group who comes here with the skills to move directly into a certain echelon of American society. But we have African Americans with that. But the point in connection with the topic is that if you want to see white people get angry, you let the church sermons on Sunday advise black youth to say nothing when the police come. You let the black organizations, the black fraternities, the black sororities, you let the black news outlets, you let the black urban radio stations all day just tell black people when the police stop, you show your ID and don't say nothing. You watch, they're going to still be police shooting. Now that,
thank you.
That don't mean you still don't say nothing. You know, you still don't fuss, fight, and flee. But the point I'm trying to show you is you're not dealing with rational people. The key here, so let's get rid of all these isms. Let's get rid of the socialism, capitalism, and imperialism and colonialism. This is about domination. This is about one group has decided that it has the God-given rights to dominate another group and to suck the lifeblood out of them because they see in that group, they see vitality, they see strength, and they see that if those people are allowed to compete with them equally, they're going to lose to these people.
Thank
That's what the African-American demographic is. The African-American demographic is a life-giving force that whites need for them to survive, and they have vowed that they will stop the African-Americans from competing with them equally, but they will use, they will extract from them the things that they need to survive. You snap your fingers right now, and you eliminated all the black people out of this country will collapse overnight. Because you know why it's going to collapse? Because now white people got to feast off their own self for exploitation. And it within a year or two, it's going to be destroyed.
Excuse me.
Black people's,
thank you.
Black
I
people's
thought we were closing out.
Pardon?
I'm sorry. I thought we were closing. Just giving
thank you so much. You put
what
me back. You pulled my
important.
Coattail from the pulpit. I'm going to sit down now. Thank you.
Thank you.
we're going to keep moving. Stephanie, even though Brother Calvin and Dr. Novus is next in my lineup, well, since you did, Steph, we'll go ahead and let you say your close out speech input, and then we'll ask Dr. Novus, and then I'll wrap up by Ms. Jackie.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Stephanie.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just want to thank God, and I want us all to thank God for the righteous verdict of guilty on all charges. You know, we need to see more of that, and that's a start. So we just thank God for the righteous verdict this time around and hope to see more of those righteous verdicts to come to put an end to this stuff. So everyone have a blessed weekend. Assalamu alaikum and blessed Ramadan.
Well, alaikum salam and blessed Ramadan to you and Mark. So we're going to move right around. And Dr. Novus, we are certainly honored, as always, to have you as a participant in the panel discussion. And what do you think as we wrap up for this evening?
Well, thank you, Brother Cameron. So the final point that I would like to make is, and it's, we have nailed it home several times tonight in the discussion tonight, and that is you can't win the battle when the cops pull you over. You're not going to win that battle that night. Just know the best thing for you to do is get yourself out of that situation and live to see another day. You can fight it in court. You can fight. You can do whatever you need to do after that time, but trying to be there, being there on the side of the street, side of the highway, arguing with a cop, fleeing, whatever, those things are not going to work out well for you. And we just have to realize that a ticket, whatever we get, jail is better than death, because we have to understand to keep our cool. And we have to teach that to our young men, our young women, even to some of the elders, even just to people in my age group. We got to keep, you know, sending that message out there. Stay cool. Just give them whatever they ask for. You know, don't argue with them and just don't let them get under your skin, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for you to be irrational so they can do what they do. And we just have to learn to stay cool. We got to have that what, you know, what I call that civil rights discipline, where if no matter if somebody hits you or whatever, you got to stay the course, because the course is more important than, you know, you trying to one-up the cop. So, again, it's so important that we remember that we're not going to win it. We're on the side of the highway arguing with a cop.
Thank you, Dr. Novus. And for our wrap-up, our actual show wrap-up, our co-host, Mr. Pianki. Mr. Pianki, please take it away.
Well, I wanted to make mention about the education that the police are required to have. Now, in St. Louis County, which is outside St. Louis, where seemingly everybody is moving, and, of course, crime rate has increased there because of where they're coming from in many cases. And St. Louis County and North County was predominantly black. But St. Louis County required that a police officer, a candidate, a recruit, have college credits up to 60 hours or an associate degree in one of the disciplines. Now, another thing, too, to show you how much power the people themselves have, you've had about at least 7 or 8 municipalities in St. Louis County, which is black municipalities, that dissolved their police departments and opted to come back with something different. Now, it had to do with budgetary reasons and also other reasons, too, that was derived from complaints by citizens. Matter of fact, Jennings, which is adjacent to Ferguson, dissolved this police department where Derek Wilson, the officer that was involved in the shooting of Mike Brown when he charged at him, he came from Jennings. So it does work. And they came back with a department called North County Cooperative. But other than that, oh, and by the way, police departments are accredited. They receive accreditation from a national organization, which is a Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement. And in order to maintain that accreditation, they have to go and be submitted to an annual assessment. Every 4 years, an on-site assessment occurs, and things like their written policies and actual practices are taken into consideration. And I know St. Louis County is accredited. You got some smaller municipalities like when it existed, it was accredited, and others. That accreditation is very valuable. So that's all I wanted to add. Oh, and I was going to say something. Somebody mentioned about the education attainment of Nigerians. And Nigerians had the highest education attainment that they attained here in the United States. You're talking about first, second, even third generations. And that's this. And actually, their family structure should be studied to see what it is that they're doing, the culture that lies within their family here in the United States, a U.S. citizen, that achieve such high achievements when it comes down to education attainment and also with household income. You find many couples that's multi-degreed. It's not unusual to see someone that's a pharmacist and maybe an engineer or something of that sort. You don't see them much in sports, but I have to take that back. You are starting to see them in sports like football and also in basketball. So that there is a ethnic group that needs to be studied and see just how they go about performing certain things. On your Ivy League college campuses, African males make up 40-41% of the black male population. So, Mr. Washington, everyone else, have a nice week.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much, our co-host, Ms. Pianki. Normally at this point in the show, we play our anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing, without the lyrics. It's just the music. But this evening I decided before we play the music to read the lyrics so that we could close out on this high note. And the lyrics go like this. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place to which our fathers sighed. We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We've come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered. Cut from the gloomy past, till now we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who hast brought us thus far on the way, thou who hast by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee. Lest our hearts, drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand, true to our God, true to our native land. And so with that, we close another episode, another show. Booker T. Washington, African American Family Room Forum. We thank all of you for joining. We thank you, and we say to you good night. And God bless you all.
Thank you. Amen.